This meeting of the Senate Environment and Energy Committee will come to order. We are, if there's any chance to get all the bills done in the first hour and a half, we'll do so. I'm not sure if we have the chance to do that, but we'll go as far as we can. Senator Dahl, welcome to the committee, Senate File 1439.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and this hopefully will help you reach that goal of getting done a little sooner. Really, this bill only adds eight words, and Senate File 1439 amends the definition of what energy-efficient projects in the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law includes, and we've really added the words on page two to the list of things that qualify as water metering devices that increase efficiency and accuracy. So this means that a municipality may use water meters in a guaranteed energy savings contract. A lot of the new water meter reading technology.
Dahl, yes. Excuse me. Apparently, the bill is missing from our packets.
Oh.
And we will get the bill unless somebody has. Let's temporarily lay your bill aside and come back to it as soon as we have the bill here. And I will ask, since, I think we might as well do that because it's pretty hard for us to be following it without the bill. Sorry about that. Senator Rood, you have two bills up. You want to come present them, both of them related to school trust lands. Welcome to the committee.
Well, good morning, and thank you for having me. I don't think I've addressed this committee yet this year, so thank you. This morning we have, Mr. Chair, we have two bills, Senate File 1034 and 1035. I do believe we're going to kind of do them together because they really address the same topic, and they're just very similar bills. So we're going to be talking about both of them at the same time. Many of you know that we have the new School Trust Commission. We've been working very hard. We've been in existence for about 2.5 years now. We think we've done a really incredible job for the children in Minnesota. Last year, the schools each got $28 per pupil from the school trust. The corpus is about $1 billion now, and so we think that this is a great thing for the children in Minnesota. So we're working really hard to enhance that. So today I have with me Denise Dietrich from the Minnesota School Board Association and Steve Chaplin for the Nature Conservancy, and they will help me explain these bills. Who would like to go first?
Mr. Chaplin, welcome to the committee.
Welcome. My name is Steve Chaplin. I am a senior conservation scientist with the Nature Conservancy. The mission of the Nature Conservancy is to conserve the lands and waters on which all life depends. And it's this mission that compelled me to testify today in favor of securing a funding source that will allow the state to buy out school trust, the trust fund on critical conservation lands. The conservation lands in question are lands that include some of the best old growth forest, peatlands, and other biologically significant habitat in the state. There's about 88,440 acres that have been placed in these designated categories, and they include 17,800 acres classified as old growth, 10,200 acres within candidate research natural areas, 7,000 acres within areas identified by the Minnesota Prairie Conservation Plan, 1,040 acres in the Natural Areas Registry Program, 1,600 acres in 207 water access sites, and 51,000 acres in the peatland, scientific, and natural areas. Now, these are all lands that need permanent protection and management so that they can retain their biological values for future generations. But there's a problem, and that is that the school trust lands are supposed to be managed to produce maximum revenue for the school trust fund, yet they cannot because of their conservation designations. In 2012, the legislature required the DNR to compensate the Permanent School Trust Fund for lands under designation or policy that prohibits the long-term economic return. And so for these reasons, the Nature Conservancy supports Senate Files 1034 and 1035 to provide funding through either the unclaimed lottery prize funds or bonding that will allow the state to buy out these critical conservation lands from school trusts. This is a win-win situation. It protects land that should never be developed for use for should never be used for maximum economic returns, and it provides permanent funding that will go towards education educating Minnesota school kids. In that sense, it's a twofer. It uses unclaimed lottery prizes for the environmental purposes for which they were intended, while at the same time providing for the growth of the corpus of this permanent school trust fund. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chaplin. Ms. Dietrich, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent over 2,000 school board members across the state. We want to thank Senator Rood for bringing forth these bills, Senate File 1034 and 1035. They are very important to the environment community and to the education community. As Mr. Chaplin described, this is a win-win solution for the students of this state and for the environmental community. One thing that wasn't mentioned is that in 2010, the legislature passed reform, school trust lands reform, and a part of that bill required that that there was an inventory of all the school trust lands taken and that a plan should be developed for the state to purchase the non-revenue generating protected lands from the trust by 2018. If the state is to meet its trust and legal responsibility, we believe that they should begin purchasing those lands now. And so both of these bills would make a strident effort in that direction. So that is why we support these bills. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Ms. Dietrich. Questions from the committee. Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And either to Senator Rood or to the testifiers, in both of your bills under the purpose section in Bill Senate File 1034, there's a phrase I'm not truly understanding, and I'm just wondering if you could explain that to me. It's line 1.10. It talks about where long-term economic return is prohibited by designation or policy. What are we talking about there?
These are the lands that I was mentioning there, things like lands that are under an old growth designation. This is a designation that the state puts on the land that prevents it from being logged. So at the same time that the school trust is requiring maximum economic return from those lands, there's a designation the state has put on the land that prevents that. And so what we're trying to do is to resolve that conflict.
So, Mr. Chair, and to the testifier, explain to me why it's been designated that. You gave it that term, but why has it been designated for that?
Well, this and other categories, these are lands that I think the community has recognized are valuable or important biological diversity lands, that there are not very many old-growth forests left in the state. And so that, you know, this was done outside of the sort of the arguments of the school trust fund, but we designated both for these old growth forests, but also for the prairie plan, for lots of other lands that we're trying to be able to maintain and manage for future generations in Minnesota. So it was a biological purpose that drove the designation of these lands.
Thank you.
And Senator Rood.
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, I think in 1858, when these trust lands were given, since then, a lot of purpose and the inventory has been lost. And so when we went back through the legislation that was passed and we did an inventory, we really needed to know what we had and where they are and who owns, you know, who's in what they're designated for. And there was a lot of surprises because people kind of lost sight of the school trust lands and their purposes and what happened to them. So through this inventory process, which was painstakingly taken so that we could look at all of them, We have found that, you know, there's some uses that really weren't conducive to the school trust land's purpose and mission.
With, I had a question about the, I guess the first bill, unclaimed lottery prize money, and just trying to find out, and I'm not expert on the constitutional issues related to it, but since 40% of the lottery proceeds are supposed to go to the Environmental Trust Fund, how does this fit in with that?
You want to take that one?
Good question.
Kim can actually, is probably better than I am.
Okay.
It's all very gentle.
Mr. Chair, Kimberly Scott for the Nature Conservancy. So the question of whether the use of unclaimed prize money for this purpose is unconstitutional rests on whether unclaimed prize money is a part of net proceeds. So there's an Attorney General's letter in 2003 that looked at this question and said that net proceeds does not specifically address unclaimed prize money. So they looked at a general legal definition of net proceeds, which would be revenues minus expenses. Because unclaimed prize dollars are not expenses, they would be a part of revenues and a part of net proceeds. So subsequently, the legislature changed the definition of net proceeds to specifically exclude unclaimed prize dollars. This is a statutory definition. It's not a constitutional definition. And so because now the net proceeds excludes unclaimed prize dollars, to use unclaimed prize dollars for this purpose would not be unconstitutional.
So in other words, in a, Mr. Knopp mentioned that it was 2003, the legislature decided to do that legal change. So, and nobody's challenged that in court, in other words.
Mr. Chair, members, that's my understanding, yes.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Senator Huffman.
Senator Marty, thank you. I liked Senator Rood and Denise Dietrich. You go back to 1858, and when the question that came out, I said under my breath to the chair, I said 1858. So thank you for validating that. You've done a good job historically playing in part the promise this state made to children in our education system, and thank you too for bringing this forward. And reminding us once again that this has been there forever, and we got to keep these trusts and get this. I love this avenue. I like where you're thinking, and you're going someplace where it needs to go regarding getting money for the trust. And so, Mr. Chair, I want to move to Senate File 1035.
Okay. Before we get to that, I want to ask if there's anybody in the audience who wanted to speak to the bills. Ms. Gibson? If there's anybody else who wanted to speak with to the bills or with concerns about the bills, please let us know as well. Ms. Gibson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. My name is Nancy Gibson. I am the co-chair of the LCCMR. It's a position I have held since 2006. And before that, I was chair of the Citizens Advisory Committee. I was there in 2003 when they decided to take the unclaimed prize money from the Environmental Trust, the lottery net proceeds. I just want you to be, share the concern about the constitutional issue regarding these trust lands use, the Environmental Trust Fund for the school trust lands. And for those of you that know me, this is a very uncomfortable position for me to be in. I will do anything possible to save habitat in northern Minnesota. However, I really do think we need to challenge the idea of using these. From what I read from the State Auditor's Report and the letter that I think I gave you, Mr. Chair, from the Attorney General's Office, net proceeds are expenses. And I think we need to make sure that before we take these steps that we are following the Constitution. And if we are not, then I think we need to change the Constitution. So with that, I will thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. And obviously, how much is the cost of the condemning these lands? How much is the cost, and how much is the unclaimed prize money? And I mean, these are Finance Committee questions mainly, but I guess I'd like to have a sense. How much does it cost to buy all these lands?
Well, Mr. Chair, we have a pretty good estimate And right now, with the inventory we have, we believe it's about $87 million that we need in total to 2018. That's why we partially are doing bonding and then partially doing the unclaimed prize money, which should get us there. It's the unclaimed prize money is about $10 million a year, although I think there's a person in Minnesota right now who has till 5 o'clock today, so it might be $9 million this year. But typically it's about $10 million a year.
And that's funny.
You know, after... this hasn't been challenged since it was done in 2003, so we really don't believe that there's a constitutionality. We also think that we don't need this money on an ongoing basis, and so when we reach the amount that we need to buy back these lands, it might be such a thing that we come to this committee and say, maybe it's time we return them to the legacy, or... You know, that's for the legislature to decide on down the road. This isn't something that we believe that the trust will need in perpetuity, but we think that this really gets us to the goal that was set forth by these lands by 2018.
So Senator Rood, you between these two bills, the Senate File 1034, you would be hoping to get about $10 million this year and $10 million next year, and the rest you'd be doing in bonding and through the other bill, your hope would be to get that money in that package.
Well, I think the bonding is $20 million and then $10 million a year. I don't know that we can accomplish it by 2018. That would be our goal. I don't know that would get us the funds to there, but at least it would get us into, the transfer of these lands, and it's all very... time-consuming to make sure that everything is done in the proper manner with all these identified lands. So it will take quite a long time, and so that's why we really need to get going on it now, because we don't want to wait till 2018 and say, oh, my gosh, we should have been working on this, 3 years ago.
I believe both these bills have been requested by Judiciary Committee, and I Senator Rood, I strongly support what you're trying to do here. I do think the fact that legislature determined that unclaimed prize money doesn't fall under the Constitution, 40% set aside, doesn't mean it is constitutional. That may be partly a judiciary issue, but it makes the job of purchasing the lands go slower. But I think Ms. Gibson's point is a legitimate one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if anyone knows about previous unclaimed prize money from past years. Has that money been used for other things? Is there a pot of money sitting there from previous years?
Mr. Chair and Senator Brown, it goes into the general fund currently. So it's being used for a variety of things, probably not the original intent of the money for schools and the environment.
Being told that last year we did the condemnation without going to the judiciary in the Senate, judiciary has asked for it. Judiciary, I think, had asked for both of these bills. No, maybe not. Maybe they have not asked for this one. Okay. They've only asked for this. So Senator Hoffman's motion on Senate File 1035 would send that bill to finance. Is there anybody else who wish to speak with concerns about this bill? And I think Ms. Gibson's concerns are about the other bill. If not, on Senator Hoffman's motion that Senate File 1035 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Finance, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. On the other bill, by the way, Senator Rood, I noticed your co-authors, you have the same co-authors on both bills, but Senator Hoffman and Weber were jumping around which order they placed them in. I don't know if they signed the bills at different times or they...
Mr. Chair, the bills did not come out at the same time, and they do sit on the School Trust Land Commission, and so we just wanted to let everybody know how strong this commission is and how well they work together.
I wondered if it was a strategic decision. Senator Weber, Senator Hoffman.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if anyone's ever really accused Senator Hoffman and myself of great strategery, to be honest with you.
Senator Weber, Senator Hoffman, one of you want to move?
I would move, Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber moves Senate File 1034 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. And I will encourage anybody here who serves on Judiciary. I don't know that anybody here does. But I think it is an appropriate issue to be talking about that 40%. I think it's a... Senator Root, I agree. This legislature did that, but that doesn't make it constitutional and so on. But on the motion of Senator Weber that Senate File 1034 be recommended pass, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Yes, I said judiciary.
Mr. Chair and committee, thank you very much.
Before you leave, I was told that judiciary has requested the other one. They didn't get it last time. Would you like to send it to finance and let them fight it out on rules if they want to challenge it? Or would you like us to re-refer to judiciary? Your choice.
Well, how about rules? We'll pick rules.
We'll just.
Rules for 200.
I have a feeling that the bill will be, even if it does get stopped for that, I think the Rules Committee, I think you talked with Senator Bach's office before this, and they said they would recognize that. Otherwise, they would have kept the floor open so they could deal with it after this committee. So we'll... Senator Hoffman, you want to reconsider your motion, move it to judiciary, or is that I'm going with what the author's preference is? It's probably going to end up in judiciary.
Yeah, it needs to go to judiciary. We'll find.
Senator Hoffman removes that Senate File 1035 be recommended pass, but this time referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Senator Dibble.
Do we need to take a vote on reconsideration of the. Just for good form.
Yes. On the motion to reconsider, previous motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Hoffman now moves that Senate File 1035 be recommended pass and referred to the Committee on Judiciary. On that motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair and members, thank you very much.
Thank you. Senator Dahl, we're ready for your bill now. It is now in the packets. I apologize for the confusion.
Mr. Chair, members, in Senate File 1439, and as I mentioned earlier, we basically on as we look at the list of energy efficient projects that are acceptable under Minnesota statute section 471.345, there's a list there. We are simply adding water metering device that increase efficiency or accuracy. So when municipalities enter into guaranteed energy savings contracts, we believe that the new technology in water metering should be included in that. We all remember the days when the meter reader came to your house and would read your meters, but with the new water meter technology, we feel that the savings that are generated from those operations can be put back into some of the additional energy efficiency infrastructure improvements that would be utilized by this particular statute. So that's really the simple nature of the bill. I have Jim Girard here, would be happy to answer any additional questions that you might have.
Mr. Girard, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Senator Dahl has adequately described the bill. It's pretty simple. It would allow for essentially larger energy savings projects. Right now, you replace windows, they're very expensive. It takes longer to pay back the loan. If you replace lighting, it pays itself back very fast. This simply allows another income stream so you can do bigger projects and save more energy.
Mr. Girard, how much of the I picture water metering devices increase efficiency, primarily reducing water consumption, but obviously pumping water is energy. How much is the energy savings from if you're cutting your water consumption by, in a residential case, if somebody's cutting their water consumption in by a third, what's that do to their electric consumption, just out of curiosity?
Mr. Chair, I don't know. That's beyond my engineering capabilities.
Questions from the committee? Is there anybody in the audience who wanted to speak to the bill? Not Senator Dibble?
Well, Ms. Chair, that's kind of a key question that you just asked that we should have an answer to.
How much energy?
Yeah, that's the whole point of calling these energy efficiency projects. Is there anyone who can help us understand that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, I don't know the numbers. The reason for the bill, and several other states have done this in one way or another, either adopting similar language to this, or they have or their statute is general enough to allow this to happen without being specific. The new technology would impact it in a couple of ways, and it's not just the new technology; it's the fact that water meters wear out after a while. Water wears out the mechanisms in them, but the fact that you don't have to have people drive around, walk up to the house, take a reading off of the meter, saves energy that way. The idea behind the bill is that when you're doing an energy savings project and a lot of buildings need to be upgraded either with lighting, with more insulation, new boilers, these things get very expensive. This adds another cash flow to the process so that you can pay off the bonds, the loans, quicker and do a better project. So it's a relationship. It's a cash flow issue that allows for more energy savings across the board, not just from the water meters, but also from the other parts of a project that are fairly expensive.
Senator Dibble?
So my question is, it says water metering devices that increase efficiency or accuracy of efficiency of energy use or water use?
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, the part of the efficiency would be the fact that you're putting in a system that reports itself and does not require somebody to go around and read the meter. That would be, it's also the accuracy would come with the fact that you are metering the correct amount of water, that you are charging somebody the correct dollar amount for the water they've used.
Senator Dibble, and this isn't coming out of the SIP dollars, this is, I'm not sure how the Uniform Municipal Contracting Law applies here, but Senator Osmick on... Senator Dibble.
I understand that these are projects that are financed outside of SIP. They're financed through companies like Johnson Controls, et cetera. One of the concerns has been that everything but the kitchen sink is thrown into these projects. And the idea is that particularly for these local units of government, guaranteed energy contracts, that they be kind of focused on energy projects. And so I'm just wondering if are we getting at energy savings, and can we say so in paragraph 9?
In the accuracy,
9?
You're saying the...
Yeah, increase efficiency of energy use.
And Senator Dibble, I would guess, I mean, pumping water is a huge energy draw, too. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not just if you're reducing the water consumption, you'd be increasing it. I'm not sure the accuracy part of it, but... We have several others who wanted to speak, I think, on this point.
Yeah, to this point, Senator Dibble, in my previous life as a city councilman, we used to have to drive a truck through every street because of the transmission distance of those meters. Now we can park a truck in two different points and be able to get all the telemetry from every one of those water meters and get it. So it saves the energy of driving around, so you're saving a lot of gas money. Also, you also reduce the number of labor hours that you need to deal with the situation, and the meters themselves are more energy efficient in the battery that it uses. So I will agree with you. The energy efficiency is tenuous at best. but it is marked. You can mark down and check off certain things that are make it more efficient.
Senator Dibble.
Great. And I accept that. It seems to be intuitive, but it'd be nice for it to actually say so in the language of the bill.
In other words, increase energy and water efficiency or something.
Yeah. So can we maybe Mr. Knopf can help us? Yeah. Could I offer an amendment that says water metering devices that increase efficiency or accuracy and, more efficient use of energy or something? I don't know. I'm not feeling poetic today. And then I'm curious if Senator Dahl.
Also look at that while Senator Benson had a comment or question or something while he's working on some language for that.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble and I were of the same mind that it didn't seem to actually focus on energy, just can we measure better? So I think we're addressing it.
So any suggestions for language?
Mr. Chair, if you want, I can suggest before the period on line on 2.3. So we're talking about increase the efficiency or accuracy of water measurement. So we would insert before the period of water measurement and reduce energy use.
Is that perfect. Perfect. Beautiful. Mr. Knopf is a poet.
Didn't know it either.
Yeah, didn't know.
Could you read the language again?
Mr. Chair, members, it would be before the period at line 2.3, insert of water measurement and reduce energy use. So it would read water metering devices that increase efficiency or accuracy of water measurement and reduce energy use.
Senator Dahl and Mr.
Chair, that acceptable?
On Senator Dibble's motion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill, is there anybody who wished to speak with concerns about the bill? If not, Senator Osmick moves. Senate File 1439, as amended, be recommended to pass, and that goes straight to the floor. On that, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Senator Dahl. Senator Chamberlain is here. Welcome to the committee. Senate File 1726.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Good to be here. I believe, Mr. Chair, we have an amendment.
The amendment is being distributed as we go. So why don't you, to delete everything amendment, we'll move that as soon as it's handed out. But why don't you go ahead and start explaining the bill as amended.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Just to sum this up real quick, we're talking about this bill doesn't create great changes, but we're trying to create efficiencies and a more effective system, more equitable system in our water management policy, and more accountable. We're not reinventing the mousetrap here or the wheel. We're just trying to realign some things. So a brief summary, Mr. Chair, is that delete all language in the bill is a result of work of Metro Cities and the Met Council. Both entities are here to support it. The bill addresses some issues with respect to regional water supply planning and the role of the advisory committee. LEDOL maintains the Met Council's role in coordinating the regional planning for the water supply. It also strengthens the role of the Master Water Supply Plan Advisory Committee. The bill establishes a technical advisory committee with state and local depth of expertise in water analysis, data and modeling. The bill eliminates the requirement that local comprehensive plans be consistent with regional water master supply plans. Local communities still need to address the water supply as an element of local plans, but they're not required to be that closely aligned or follow the regional plan directly. It allows the technical committee and the policy advisory committee and the water commission, the legislative water commission, to address long-term needs around water supply, the more definitely before requiring cities to make drastic changes to their water supply plans. The bill provides for an appropriation to the Met Council for the work of the both committees. The council will be charged with administrating and managing some of the processes. The last section of the bill addresses the North and East Metro groundwater management area. It prohibits the DNR from implementing any permit changes or requiring the communities to connect to the regional surface water plan until we receive a report from the Technical Committee February 17. And lastly, I'll skip that last bullet. So with that, Mr. Chair and members, that's a quick overall, quick summary of what we have here. It's not, again, creating a whole new entity, just realigning some pieces and putting something on hold so we have a more comprehensive look at our metro-wide water plan before we start spending $500 million on pipes and doing some other things. So we believe it's a smart approach, effective approach, efficient, and it still keeps all the players involved. Front end instead of on the back end. Thank you. We have to delete all now.
Senator Dibble moves the A2 amendment to put the bill in the shape the author wishes. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Chamberlain, you want to go ahead with your witnesses?
Yes. I think we'll start with Patricia Nauman.
Ms. Nauman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. Metro Cities represents 90 cities in the metropolitan area, both before the legislature and the Metropolitan Council. Metro Cities does support Senate File 1726. And as Senator Chamberlain pointed out, this really does allow for us a stepping back, and I would say for us strengthening the framework by which the conversations and discussions around water supply should be taking place in the region. It doesn't, doesn't throw the baby out with the bathwater with respect to the Master Water Supply Advisory Committee, but it does strengthen the role of the committee and slows down requirements for cities with respect to their local plans needing to be consistent with the regional Master Water Supply Plan until we have agreed to science, sound science, and broader stakeholder input on the issues. The technical advisory committee that is put into statute under this bill is something that Metro Cities has advocated for at the Metropolitan Council, and we do support having that language be in statute. Again, it really helps to make sure that all the appropriate folks are at the table moving forward with these long-term conversations. The bill also does provide for some funding to the Metropolitan Council for water supply planning. It keeps the role of the council in water supply planning. We do support some kind of permanent funding. Originally, when the MOSAC was created by the legislature, it was set to sunset, and the council has gotten extensions, and this bill would essentially eliminate that sunset to allow this work to go forward on a longer-term basis, which we do support. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions from Ms. Nauman? Not Mr. Kennedy?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the Commission. Jay Kennedy. I'm the city engineer for the city of Hugo. And as a practitioner of water supply systems for not only the city of Hugo, but other communities in the metro area, one of the things that we've struggled with is the whole idea of making sure that we have all of the technical information that we need as a region so that good planning can occur as opposed to the other way around. It feels sometimes like right now like the science is a little bit behind right now in terms of how that's fitting in with some of the policy decisions that face the legislature. And so when we think about the agencies that we deal with on a daily basis, we think about the Department of Health, the PCA, the DNR, others, Met Council, in terms of our planning and implementation of water systems. The technical advisory committee that's being suggested and created with this bill will bring those very strong technical people together with those agencies in a more collaborative sense than what we feel, at least right now, seems to be at times a little more disjointed and more difficult to manage and through. So with that, taking together that kind of information, pulling it together, and then working with the revamped Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee. They can then better inform the legislature through the Legislative Water Commission on those policy decisions. And so with that, that's all I have to offer today.
Thank you, Mr. Kennedy. Question, Senator Sieben.
Thank you, Senator Marty. This is actually for the author, but Senator Chamberlain, in Section 3 of the Delete All, it talks about the report that's required. Until the report is submitted to the legislature, these things can't happen. I know that a city that I represent, Cottage Grove, has submitted concerns to the commissioner of the DNR about the groundwater management area plan or whatever the title of it is. So I'm just curious, when is this report going to be submitted to the legislature? Because that seems to be the modifying clause of when these other things can happen.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, I believe the original intent was February of 2017.
And Senator Chamberlain, is that in statute that the commissioner won't submit the report until that time, or is that just what you think it is?
No, I'm sorry, I found it. It's page 4, subdivision 3, paragraph B.
So right, that's what I'm talking about.
It requires February 15, 2017, and then we require every 5 years we'll continue this metro-wide water planning process so we keep up on it.
But the way I'm reading the legislation, correct me if I'm wrong, is that until the report is submitted to the legislature, the commissioner of the DNR shall not implement either Clause 1 or 2. So I'm asking, when is that report coming?
Well, the report, Mr. Chair and Senator Sieben, the report is due by February 15, 2017. If that's not clear, then maybe we can change it up here in the legislation. But the idea is we want to have a report from them and then allowing them to go ahead with any other major plans. But the only thing we're asking for delay on here is the currently they have a plan for implementing surface water and running pipes and extensive, Senator Scalzi is familiar with this, extensive rework of the system at great cost without a comprehensive look. And the second piece is they also had a plan in the groundwater plan to permit charges for various water usages. And again, those are the only two things. There are several things in the groundwater management plan that can still go ahead: conservation, test wells, monitoring wells, that sort of stuff. So there's only two pieces of those plans that we're asking for a little time before we spend that money. But other pieces of the plan, we have no problem with.
I think on your point, Senator Sieben, though, it says until the report in the paragraph above says reports. So I think that may need clarification. Senator Sieben.
Well, my question is, if you don't want these things implemented until February of 2017, maybe you should just say that date instead of referencing a report.
Oh, would you suggest we change a little bit in the language in the legislation here to make that clear?
Well, I think that this language is not clear.
Okay.
And because the report, if the report is submitted earlier, then the language on lines 21 to 23 could move forward the way I read it.
On Senator Sieben's comment, the Senate Council.
Well, Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Sieben, Mr. Knopf and I were talking about this issue as well, and we thought on line 4.19 we would just insert until the 2017 report required under section 473.1565 subdivision 3 paragraph B is submitted. So then only until once that's submitted may they conduct these activities.
That's okay. That's fine with us. Thank you.
You might actually want to put a specific date in case the report isn't done by that time, then they can't act till whatever. You might be better off saying until February 15th.
Either way.
Senator Sieben?
Right. I think that's better. So perhaps.
Senate Council, until February.
So then, Mr. Chair, members, Senator Sieben, until February 15th, 2017.
The commissioner
shall not, of natural resources, shall not. But we might still want to reference the statutory reference as well.
Mr. Chair, I would agree that would be preferable to reference the above paragraph.
Won't you
sure.
do that, Senator Stephen? Won't we wait a little bit, continue having testimony and questions, because I think Senator Scalzi, you had a question too.
Actually, thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't have a question, but yes, there's a lot of angst on the part of all of the communities, of which there are, I think, 13 that may be affected by some of the work that's been prepared and some of the initiatives that have been discussed related to the groundwater management area that would affect them greatly, and they have not actually been part of the process. So I think this would help with those communities, of which Cottage Grove may be one, but they go all the way to Hugo and Lino Lakes and many communities in the Northeast Metro. So this would be helpful to those communities who are struggling with accepting some of this at this time.
Senator Benson, did you have your hand up? Okay. Did you want to work on an amendment right now? Do you have an amendment that you're all ready to offer? Or should we just continue with testimony first? Let me ask first if there are other questions for Mr. Kennedy. Mr. Kennedy, I have one that was related to a previous bill. For City of Hugo, if you're for some quantity of thousands of gallons of water or something, what kind of electric, how much energy do you use to pump water?
Mr. Chair, thanks for putting me on the spot. I really appreciate that. You know, I'm going to borrow a statement. That's beyond my area of engineering expertise.
But do you know, are your water department's energy bill is fairly substantial? I'm just curious.
For our well houses, yes, yeah. It's fairly substantial. That's really the main
because you're
energy
pumping water.
User. Yep.
Next witness, Jason Ouellette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senators. I'm Jason Ouellette. I'm Finance and Energy Director for the Metropolitan Council's Environmental Services Division. You may know us mostly for our wastewater utility that serves 108 connected metropolitan cities. We do have some other roles in water sustainability, one of which is this planning role, but we don't run any of the water supply systems, which is part of the reason why we want to work real hard to try and get a broader collaboration with the cities. We are aware also that some of the cities are threatened by some of this language. And despite having a number of groups already and about 50 cities in voluntary groups, I think this will make them more comfortable, and we want to work towards that broad collaboration with the cities and have the resources to be able to provide good science and advance this ball further. So I agree with all of the statements that have been made so far, and we approve of this as well. With that, I'll just answer questions if there are any.
Thank you. And Senator Chamberlain, you have one more witness, and also I see DNR would like to testify as well. But go ahead, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I'm Brian Baer. I'm the Hugo City Administrator. I'll just add a little bit to what's been said here already. The Hugo City Council has reviewed this bill. They support it. They think that it's very responsible. We do have a council member that sits on the Met Council's Water Supply Advisory Committee now. I also sit on the DNR's Groundwater Management Area Advisory Team. There are two real tracks here that really need to align. First, this discussion about groundwater use in growing cities. The growing suburban communities in the metro area, for the most part, were groundwater users. There's a concern about sustainability that has caused a lot of additional policy-level discussion with the agencies. There are a lot of agencies and other entities that regulate water, and it's difficult sometimes to really get our arms around the different directions of all of these agencies. So what we like about this is a coordinating effort to pull everybody together on one committee that includes municipal water suppliers on the group. So having a policy discussion that then goes directly up to the Legislative Water Commission. Secondly, with all this policy discussion, at times, we believe that the policy discussion has gotten a little too far ahead of where the science would let us be. And so having the technical advisory committee involved with the experts in the field that would provide recommendations and feedback directly to the group, we like that. A lot of the cities in the North and East metro area do have concerns about the language that's in the DNR's groundwater management area plan. We also have concerns about the direction of regional water supply discussions that have been happening in our area. And those discussions should slow down a little bit, and this bill does allow for some time for that policy side to slow down and let the science catch up.
Thank you, Mr. Baer. Questions from the committee? Not Mr. Meyer, are you the one who is going to speak for TNR? Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members of the record, Bob Meyer, Department of Natural Resources Assistant Commissioner, and we have been working with the authors and the cities on this bill, and we appreciate them taking out one piece of the language that would directly violate our supplemental or mediation agreement that we have with the White Bear Lake citizens and residents in that area on our lawsuit on the White Bear Lake area. The concern that we have is a language on 4.21 to 2.2 that folks are talking about that would specifically identify the North and East Metro Groundwater Management Area draft plan and kind of put that into a hiatus status until that report is presented. We have two other groundwater management areas that are going on in the state that are very important to the sustainability and water quality in those regions, the Straight River, and also another one out southeastern Minnesota. That this language may send them the signal that they should come to the legislature and also put their project on hiatus as well. We do not plan on implementing any permit changes in the period of this report. Actually, we would work with the group to make sure that the groundwater management area that two of these representatives sit on does that, have this discussion with the groundwater management area group itself. But to single out that groundwater management area group in this legislation and put them on hold, we're fearful of the potential impacts that has for other two stakeholder groups that are out there. If the legislature wants to do that, perhaps they should just repeal the groundwater management area authority we have, and we'll just deal with this on a permit-by-permit basis. The purpose of these groups is to bring everybody together and have consensus recommendations to move forward on how to deal with groundwater sustainability, groundwater quality, not only for municipal growth, but also for agricultural growth, industrial opportunities, and those types of things. So the concerns we have is maybe we can work the language to deal with my concerns, but is singling out the North and East Metro Groundwater Plan in this bill may send the signal to these two other areas that they should probably be doing the same thing, which would put us back several years in groundwater management sustainability efforts.
So, Senator Zeeben.
Well, and I'm taking this in a different direction, but Commissioner Meyer, does the DNR commissioner now have the authority to require communities to connect to a regional surface water source?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Zeeben, no, and we have no problems with that language at all. I think the fear that has come up in a lot of communities is the result of this mediated settlement that the DNR participated in with the citizens on White Bear Lake that basically says part of that is that the legislature has to implement funds to begin that system build out by 2018 or 2017, which is a huge lift, and there's going to need to be a lot of discussions involved with municipalities and the legislature for that to even happen.
So, Mr. Meyer, you're saying we should delete 4.21 and 2.2, or what was your other one, or they should repeal the requirement that they have to get this all done by 2018?
Mr. Chairman, no, it's just the legislature kind of told the DNR to begin these groundwater management areas, and we take it very seriously and put a lot of time and effort in doing that. If we're going to start picking them apart one by one because we don't want to implement the recommendations, perhaps a larger policy discussion should take place about what is the value of a groundwater management area to begin with. We put a lot of time and take it very seriously. A lot of other stakeholders have put a ton of time in these meetings as well, trying to come up with consensus approaches to deal with these difficult permitting issues so it's not a last-in, first-out situation. How do we deal with the growth in Hugo and in Cottage Grove and in Woodbury at the same time as provide water and make sure there's water for the residents of White Bear Lake? That was the intention of the groundwater management area. We have no problems with the language that says that shall not require communities to connect to a regional surface water source. That's a huge discussion for all of us to have in the future, but to single out that the work in the Northeast Groundwater Management Area plan is on hold until this group does something, we feel is in the wrong direction.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Senator Chamberlain.
Mr. Chair, members, we We support the groundwater management area. We have not come anywhere near saying get rid of it. We understand there's a need for a management of the groundwater, and we want to do that. As Mr. Barrett pointed out, we want to get the technology and the science ahead of the policy. And I think singling out this particular area is simply because that is where the plan has come up with this particular issue of a very expensive project that is ahead of the science and imposing drastic changes in the community. So we support the groundwater management area. We have. We're just asking for a little, the communities are asking for a little leverage and a little time to breathe here. And again, it's a collaborative effort. We're not asking to get rid of it, but we do believe that the policy has gotten ahead of the science, and we want to listen to the communities who have said they have a lot of concerns about this, but still willing to do it. The last piece is that there's a huge, the assistant commissioner goes a little bit too far. There are a lot of pieces. Those of you who have read the groundwater management plan, it's a nice piece of, it's a nice document. There's a lot of pieces in there that they can do above and beyond this. So that, just to say that if we do this, it gets rid of the whole plan and we should get rid of it is a bit of a reach. All we're asking is for two little pieces temporarily until the science comes up and not get rid of the whole plan. There's still a lot of things they can do with this plan to implement conservation and studying the issue.
Mr. Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, maybe another possibility would be to have this group review the recommendations of the North and East Metro Groundwater Management Plan and bring that into their final report as well. And my concern is this, that the Strait River and Bonanza Valley will be in here either later on this year on the floor or next session looking for some kind of relief from some of their concerns they may have. I'm not sure. It's kind of a camel's head under the tent argument, but the discussion has come up on this bill in the other body that perhaps those water management areas should be suspended as well. So that's a concern that we have, and we want to make sure that plan is working with this committee that's going to come up with recommendations. So perhaps we could come up with some language that would meet us both in the middle to deal with that, Mr. Chairman.
Sarah Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Meyer, you said that this suspended the ground management plan?
I don't Mr. Chair, Senator Benson, suspended. The language on lines 4.19, it says, until the report required, which I believe is February of 2017, the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall not implement the groundwater appropriation permit changes. So that's what I'm referring to.
Mr. Chair.
Sarah Benson.
Mr. Meyer, so it's permit changes and requirement to connect to a regional surface water resource. It's my understanding from Senator Chamberlain you have a lot of other things you could still work on. Is that accurate?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Benson, yes, and I have no problems. The department has no problems or concerns with the language on 4.23, which would require communities to connect. My concern is just the signal that this language sends to the other two groundwater management areas that are ongoing and working very diligently to deal with their regional water issues as well.
Mr. Meyer, I can understand the, I think you said the camel's head under the tent. I think it's the camel's nose in the tent.
But, sorry.
camel underneath the tent.
You took it one step too far. Okay.
Anyway, for the other groundwater management areas, I understand they could take a message from this and come in with legislation. I think this legislation, I understand your concern. You'd rather go ahead with what's going ahead, but it seems to me that if this isn't, this sounds to be what some of the folks in that area are saying, they'd like to slow it down a bit. I understand your concern. I'm just saying I don't know that we have to say that because it's being changed here.
Thank you.
That we should change it, that we're going to have to also change it in the other areas. So, Senator Weber and Senator Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to say, too, I think that when we start talking about plans like this and the fact that sometimes our goals have outpaced the science, I think that it provides a legitimacy to pull back a little bit and say, yes, let's play some catch-up here. You know, and obviously if other areas say, well, if they have that similar problem, then obviously we need to pay attention to that. But I don't think that this is just an automatic given that they have to do, because each area's issues will be different. They will be unique to the problems that they have. And I think in this particular case, they've outlined their needs here quite well. And I think we should be willing to go along with that.
Further, Senator Benson.
Mr. Chair, to the camel's nose under the tent, some of us thought these water management areas were the first step to statewide water management areas. So if we want to address camel's nose issues, that was one several of us were concerned about when these water management areas were initially implemented.
Anyway, I'm going to suggest that the author and DNR can continue talking. This bill has been requested by state and local because of a technical advisory committee. And I'm going to suggest the same thing with Senator Rood's bills, and that is, I think, the Senate, I understand the importance of deadlines, but given the House is very, very, very flexible with their deadlines, I think we will ask that Rules Committee take a look at that, because I think this has been coming along a lot in recent weeks, and I didn't know it was going to state and local, but apparently it is. So I'm going to suggest that we do that and ask for the extension of date. Senator Scalzi.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, state and local has had their final meeting of the year, and I'm not sure how this would translate to state and local unless we can convince the chair to reopen the committee if something comes from rules. That would be a path that would have to be addressed.
Senator Scalzi, yes, and I was told we could also possibly fold it into a DNR bill, but state and local still would want to look at the technical committee. You said they're not planning to meet anymore this year?
That's right.
What's the committee's wish?
Well, Mr. Chair, I still think that we should fix the language on 4.19.
And haven't fixed it yet. I'm sorry.
I think they have.
Senator Sieben has an amendment on 4.19.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members, and Senator Sieben, the suggested amendment would be to read as follows at line 4.19. Until the date the first report is required to be submitted under Minnesota Statute Section 473.1565, Subdivision 3, Paragraph B, and then get rid of is submitted to the legislature. It'll say then the Commissioner of Natural Resources shall not.
Senator Sieben moves that. Is there any discussion? Not all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. On the bill.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. What would be the appropriate motion at this point in time?
The appropriate motion would be to the Committee on State and Local Government, but because of the timeline, I think we could get an extension on the deadlines. It's just a question of they're not planning to meet anymore. Senator Dibble.
I'm sorry if this question has already been answered. Has state and local government requested it? Oh, then, Mr. Chair, we cannot not.
Well, we could send it anywhere we want. It doesn't it probably
know,
gets tied up in rules.
It's not a dispute that
we will
that should or would prevail.
Senator Benson.
Senator Marty, given that state and local has made it clear they're not going to meet again, if we sent it there, then the author could make a Rule 5 motion or something to try to get it where it needed to go. I want to be respectful of the process, and I'm sorry, Senator Chamberlain, to make you do that. I just feel like we should be respectful of the chairs.
And Senator Benson, if we can get them to hear those things, again, it's possible to fold it into another bill from this committee so that we've passed out already. So. I'll be glad to talk with Senator Chamberlain about that. In other words, do I have a motion?
I would so move, Mr. Chair.
Senator Weber moves it to state and local then?
Yes,
Yes.
As amended. Senate File 1726 be recommended pass as amended and referred to the Committee on State and Local Government. Is there further discussion? Anybody else who needed to speak to the bill? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Chamberlain. They're going to meet again. They have other bills, Senators Galaxy were told. Senator Saxog, I'm sorry, I didn't. Is that what it's called? Welcome to the committee, Senate File 517.
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. And members, today with 517, I have the A8 amendment.
Senator Saxog has the A8 amendment, which I see in our packets, and we got the first engrossment and the A8 amendment. And,
Mr. Chair, I so move at the A8.
It's been through another committee, so it's not technically an author's amendment, but I think you've got an agreement, and that's what, okay.
But Mr. Chair, I have a oral amendment to that A8 amendment, I would ask that it on line 1.6 between facilities and other that we add after facilities, we'd insert utilizing crop residues. It is important that the crop residues be included in this. Not important that the forest materials be used.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I make that
Senator
oral motion.
Rosen moves the A8 amendment with the language after facilities, I assume before the comma, on 1.6, facilities utilizing crop residues. And she moves the amendment with that incorporated. Is there any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Rosen. I'm pleased to bring forward this bill. This bill is a production incentive program that will help establish a new industry in Minnesota, utilizing forestry and agricultural materials to produce high-value fuels, chemicals, and energy. The amendment that was just adopted encourages a similar level of innovation on the feedstock side by helping to encourage the establishment of perennial energy crops. With me today is Brennan Jordan, Great Plains Institute and Bioeconomy and Coalition of Minnesota, John Warren, Green Biologics, Central Minnesota Renewables, Tom Peterson, Minnesota Farmers Union, Steve Morris, Minnesota Environmental Partnership, and Whitney Clark, Friends of the Mississippi River. They can all give brief presentations and help answer some questions.
Thank you, Senator Saxog. Mr. Jordan, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, I'm Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute.
I'm just going to have Steve come up.
Sorry for that interruption. Mr. Chair and members, I'm Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. The Bioeconomy Coalition is a multi-stakeholder group. It includes agriculture, forestry, startup companies, established industries, and the environmental community. Our mission as a coalition is to make Minnesota the best place in the world for renewable chemical, advanced biofuel, and biomass thermal energy projects. We have a great opportunity as a state to build on our strengths. We've got a lot of startup companies. We've had over $200 million in venture capital investment. We have an ethanol industry, biofuels industry, and forest products industry to build on. This bill offers a production-based incentive. In the coalition's view, this is a responsible way to help stimulate the development of this industry. No facility receives a production incentive until they're producing. They have to get up and running, get financed. They have to have good technology. There is no upfront money for projects through this program. And this bill, if this passes, would help to stimulate a whole variety of types of projects. It could include advanced biofuel projects, renewable chemical projects, including green chemicals and safer chemicals. There's a big focus on that in our with a number of companies. It could be anaerobic digestion projects that help cities and counties that are trying to reduce the putting organics into landfills. You could do other things with those materials that are higher value. We have worked with the University of Minnesota Extension on an economic impact study of the results of this bill. The University of Minnesota Extension has projected $830 million in new economic output as the result of this bill stimulating 14 new projects, and it would be over 3,000 new jobs. Those are not my numbers. They are by an objective source at the university. There are a number of benefits for consumers: safer products, cleaner fuels, lower cost sources of heat for people that are not on the natural gas system. For the environment, this offers cleaner fuels, again, safer, less toxic chemicals, and cleaner water. And we're very proud to have reached an agreement with some other groups that will be testifying today on this amendment that requires the use of perennial feedstocks in the bill. We really believe that, you know, the coalition is in total support of that amendment and that approach, and we do believe that this really demonstrates that, in addition to the other benefits, that this program moving forward would help result in cleaner water as well. Mr. Chair, members, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Jordan. Mr. Warren, next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for having me, committee. My name is John Warren, and I represent Green Biologics. We are a company engaged in renewable chemical production. I'd say we are a leader in the field and going to be one of the first companies to produce on a commercial scale in Little Falls, Minnesota. We feel that Minnesota is in a position to be part of a new and growing green chemicals industry. Our company cast a very wide net across a number of states in determining our site selection. Minnesota really came out on top when we did that. Not only does it have a wide range of feedstock options, but it's also because of Minnesota's past leadership in developing a biofuels and forest products industry. These industries complement renewable green chemicals and are examples of Minnesota success stories. We believe this bill will allow existing Minnesota industry to move into new markets and help establish Minnesota in a leadership position in renewable green chemicals. The program would send a clear signal on the commitment of Minnesota to support the industry development. We think it's a very wise investment. As a performance-based program, the incentive won't be available until we have made our investment, until we are full operation, and we're contributing back to the Minnesota economy. We believe our Central Minnesota Renewal Project is a good example of the Minnesota opportunity. By repurposing an existing ethanol plant, we significantly reduce our capital cost exposure and construction risk. We also de-risk the plant in Little Falls by placing it in a new and growing green chemical industry and taking it out of one that at the current time is subject to some market uncertainty. Little Falls offers an established site and infrastructure, extensive specialized process equipment conducive to renewable chemical production, and a very capable workforce. The community has been highly supportive of our project, and we're excited at being part of the Little Falls community. The site impacts are minimal. If you drive past the site now, you won't notice much difference with the site once we're finished with our construction and our repurposing of the plant. And because the infrastructure changes are small, engineers can carefully design the upgrades around the existing operations and minimize downtime required for construction. By allowing the plant to operate, it can continue to be productive. On the product marketing side, Minnesota has a growing cluster of bio-based companies and companies that are engaged in the manufacture of consumer goods that can use bio-based inputs such as ours. CMR end products are green chemicals that are derivatives that will go into derivatives used in many paints, coatings, and adhesives. There are high-value markets that we are looking forward to in formulations used in personal care products such as nail polish and also household cleaners. We are excited about the Minnesota opportunity and hope the committee supports this bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Warren. Looks like Mr. Peterson's not up there yet. I don't know. Oh, he's. Oh, okay. Mr. Morris or Mr. Coughlin, go ahead.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Whitney Clark. I'm the Executive Director of Friends of the Mississippi River. We're here to enthusiastically support this bill today. As some of you may know, when this bill initially came up, we had very serious concerns about the potential water quality impacts of residue harvest, corn stover harvest, on Minnesota's waters. We have, as this committee is well aware, very, very serious agricultural water quality challenges in Minnesota. Our Minnesota nutrient reduction strategy is calling for a 45% reduction in nitrogen by 2045. Our site-specific standard for the South Metro Mississippi River calls for 32% reduction in suspended sediment. If you look upriver further to the Minnesota River's contribution to the Mississippi River, it's a 55 to 60% reduction that's being required. So we were very concerned that the stover harvest for biofuels could negatively impact that, take us in the wrong direction, dig the hole deeper. So I'm happy to say that we've been able to cooperate with Senator Saxhog and the Bioeconomy Coalition to introduce components of this bill that are in the amendment today that significantly improve the bill from a water quality standpoint, actually make this a clean water bill. And we're pleased about this. What the bill will do is help us meet our clean water goals by encouraging more diversity on the landscape, providing a market-based approach to get perennials, and give producers another option that provides many of the other benefits that we're looking for, like water quality, habitat, carbon sequestration, pollinator habitat, et cetera. So Friends of the Mississippi River is pleased to support this bill and wants to thank the Bioeconomy Coalition and Senator Saxhog for working so diligently with us to improve the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Clark. Who's going next? Mr. Morris, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Senator Marty and members of the committee. My name is Steve Morris. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Environmental Partnership. So I'm here on behalf of our 70-plus organizations representing a suite of environmental conservation groups in the state and over 400,000 Minnesotans. When this bill was in the Ag Policy Committee, for those of you who are on that committee, you may recall I and others testified against it, raising concerns with the water quality impacts of this bill, the way it was structured. I, too, would like to just say on behalf of our organization and network that we are happy to support this bill with the changes that have now been brought forward by Senator Saxhog. We thank Senator Saxhog and the Bioeconomy Coalition for really spending a lot of time over the last over the last year, but most intensively over the last couple of weeks, to really move to something that we all feel can really work. We are excited about this because it's good ag policy, it's good water quality policy, and it's good rural diversification. This creates new markets for agricultural products. It creates crop diversity on the landscape. It creates habitat for everything from wildlife, birds, to pollinators. And perhaps most importantly, it ramps up and really beefs up what is the most important water quality tool that we have to improve water quality in our toolbox, and that is putting more vegetation into the landscape. And so we're real excited about that. The amendment you have before you, there are three legs that I just want to touch on and make sure people kind of get the scope of it. Number one, the amendment ramps up the amount of perennials that would be involved in any cellulosic facility. It starts at 10% in the first year and ramps up to 50% by the fifth year and thereafter. So it would truly be, at a minimum, something that's using existing corn residues, like corn stover, and then perennial crops, proceeds from perennial crops. In addition, it would provide some beefing up a little bit the harvesting guidelines so that we are harvesting stover to make sure we're improving soil using the NRCS soil conditioning index score. So we're actually improving soil, which means we won't be over-harvesting the stover along the way. And the third leg is really important, because although a lot of people express a desire and support to use more perennials in these systems, there are systems in these biofuel systems, these cellulosic facilities, there are two big problems in using perennials. And it's not the technology, it's not that we don't know how to do the processing, it's supply and price. And so the last piece really goes after that supply and price. Only it does it through a working lands initiative that's in the amendment. And what the Working Lands Watershed Restoration Initiative does is it takes the work that we're doing on cleaning up our watersheds, takes the science where you have a watershed restoration plan that's being adopted by and being done by the PCA with local, oftentimes SWCDs or local entities, and then it tells the Board of Water and Soil Resources that identify two prospective plants that are located where we have significant water quality impacts caused by agriculture. And if you look at like the nitrogen map of where we have the greatest nitrogen problems and then put the ethanol plants that we have currently, they overlap very nicely because the ethanol plants go where we have a lot of corn, and that's where we have some of the greatest problems. So this amendment says we'll go into two of those watersheds, and through a contract, we'd provide a conservation contract to farmers to say, you can move it around your farm in a rotation, but it provides an incentive so that you can plant perennial crops, get an incentive that is 90% of the CRP payment, Conservation Reserve Program payment in the local area. But instead of having that land set aside for conservation purposes, it can be harvested for biofuels. It can also be harvested for livestock. We do believe that more livestock on the land, it can be beneficial to water quality, and so it can be harvested for livestock in addition to the biofuels. And so it's an incentive program to incentivize more vegetative cover into the landscape. And that's the third leg of the stool, and we need all three of those to actually make it work. But what it does is it really builds a powerful tool. As we look at the nitrogen plans that Mr. Clark was talking about, the largest component in the PCA plans, if we're actually going to get to delisting our waters for nitrogen and to reaching our goals, most of that reduction has to come from increased vegetation in these watersheds. And so this is really the first attempt to link the working lands with water quality and with a new market to help drive it. And so that's the idea behind it, but we have the statutory language, and then there is some non-codified language, which in the first biennium, we have met with the Board of Water and Soil Resources and other agencies, but in the first biennium, it really requires the Board of Water and Soil Resources to develop a plan for exactly what watersheds match up with these criteria the best, survey the interest of landowners, assess the rate to make sure the rates are right, basically set everything up, look to where we can optimize federal farm programs, because there are some farm programs for working lands that we could dovetail into this, come up with a timeline for implementation, figure out how we integrate it best with other conservation programs, and then come up with a funding need and bring it back to the legislature so that this, to appropriate the money for the contracts. The contracts would be a minimum of 10 years, which is what the ethanol incentive program is, so it aligns nicely with that. But in the first biennium, it's basically working through all the bugs. And what we want to do is send a message, just like we're doing with the facility incentive in the other parts of the bill, send a message to producers as well as to farm producers as well as to ethanol producers that we're serious about this as a state. We're going to figure out a way to make this work so we get the benefits of the ethanol production and we get the benefits for habitat and water quality all at the same time. And because we think this is a really significant effort to chart a new a non-regulatory approach to solving our problems, we're real excited about it and happy to stand here in support of Senator Saxog's bill.
Thank you, Mr. Morse. And this is the same language the House Ag Committee dealt with today, or?
Mr. Chairman, on the House side, if I'm allowed to talk about that other chamber in this body, because they split the ag and environment portions of their budget bill, the House adopted the parts dealing with the facility incentive on Representative Hamilton's bill, as well as the harvesting guidelines. The working lands watershed restoration piece was not adopted because that's not with his jurisdiction. So we'll be working to locate that someplace else. But the coalition and all the players are fully in support of all the pieces.
Wonderful. Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Tom Peterson. I represent the Minnesota Farmers Union, and we too support this bill as amended. Appreciate the parties coming together. Feel this bill is an important compromise that offers opportunities for projects to move forward that will benefit our farmers. The bill is an important step in helping to commercialize the next generation of biofuels and offer value-added opportunities for agriculture and bio-based chemicals. I'll just leave it at that. I think the previous testifiers have done a nice job of laying out a lot of the benefits of this legislation. Appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Saxog, Senator Weber, did you have a question?
I did.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a point of clarification. looking at the 100,000 acres in the amendment there for the pilot watershed project, and I assume that 100,000 total acres refers to the combination of the two watersheds. Is that correct?
That's what our intention is.
Okay,
excuse me.
Very good. And then a follow-up, Mr. Chair. Just questioning, what is the significance of the 100,000 acres? You know, as I quantify things coming from off the farm, you're looking at almost 4.5 townships worth of land, and all of a sudden that seems like a really big pilot project. And my home county has 12 townships, so that would be over a third of the county. So I just would like to know what went into selecting that 100,000 acre figure, and where did that really get pulled from?
Mr. Chair, Senator Weber, I believe that is. I was just going to do a little back of the envelope math, but I believe what that represents is the amount of acreage you would need to produce sufficient perennial feedstock to fuel two commercial scale facilities at 50% perennial.
Okay,
Mr. Chairman, could I just a little bit of correction, Mr. Chairman. I would just addition to that, it's a little bit more. Our estimation is it'd take about 37,500 acres per plant at a 50% level. But there's also this little bit of other use that might occur, such as livestock, and so we wanted to make sure we had enough capacity in the conservation program to provide the resources necessary for the plant. And so it was originally 200,000 acres, but when we came down to half of the plants, and we just cut it in half down to 100,000 acres.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. It was interesting to hear livestock on the land is good for water quality. I'm remembering Senator Dill, so it turns out he was right all along.
That's true.
For folks who don't remember, he used to hand out this packet about why livestock was good for the environment. And I just wanted to say, Mr. Chair, thank you to Senator Saxog, and thank you to the stakeholders for working this out, especially because my name is on the bill, and my enviro friends came to visit me in my office, and that was awkward. So this is a great work compromise. I really appreciate it. It's a good bill.
I want to say, Senator Saxog, I know you've had lots of challenges pulling this together, and I think you've done good work.
Well, Mr. Chair, there's a lot of good work done. I don't know much about agriculture, you know. I'm kind of in this schlick because of the forests, you know. But I'm very happy the way everybody worked together.
Senator Saxog, Senate Council has a technical change they recommend on page 3, line 29, is it, of the amendment?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think it would be better on line 3.29, delete will and insert shall. We usually use the term shall, not will, in those situations for the report. And then I was thinking that Senator Osmock might be happier if you put in after chairs and ranking minority members, so that that's generally what we do now is when we put the chairs and so it would be after chairs and ranking minority members. And I think after committees, you could insert and divisions to be very clear for that we're talking about policy and finance. In the Senate, we call them divisions. So, Mr. Chair, let me just go over. I just want to explain it first. But on 3.29, delete will, insert shall. Same line after chairs, insert and ranking minority members. And then after committees, insert and divisions.
Senator Hoffman moves that amendment. Any discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Further discussion on the bill. Is there anybody who had to speak to the bill with concerns? If not, Senator Rosen moves that Senate File 517, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Members.
Good luck. Thank you, Senator Saxa. This committee, we are now told that the other room may be available as early as, I was told, 3:15. Senator Sieben, is that what you're saying?
Right.
Can members of the committee come back 45 minutes earlier? I know nobody likes to be here late on this day, but if we could do that, I think the other bills will be relatively quick. There are three bills, and I also wanted to mention tomorrow we are having a hearing, and I apologize. I hate being the last committee meeting on before a break, but I think we have to meet. We cannot get a room till 1:30 tomorrow, and we're dealing with the wild rice issue, both the presentation on the PCA report, which came up today, and Senator Tomasoni has a bill up there. That's 1:30 tomorrow, but we'll be meeting at 3:15, if that's okay with the committee, in room 112. With that, the committee's in recess till 3:15.